Someplace there's got to be a place where people are free to discuss what they know and what they don't know and to find out what they can.
Radioactive Waves is presented by the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History. Together, we will explore all things atomic, nuclear, and radioactive, along with some interesting surprises from our museum's collections and connections.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Anna Part, and I'm here today with my co-host, David Gibson, and we work for the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History.
Thank you, Anna. And first off, I want to start, of course, by thanking our Atomic History Patron members. We really appreciate you guys. Your support is part of what makes this podcast possible. So thank you, Atomic History Patron members. This podcast is going to be an interview that I was able to do with Hal Bell. If you have never met Hal Bell, you're missing out. I just have to start by saying that. He is a very charismatic, energetic, just this wonderful individual that the more you hear from him and the more you hear about him, the wonderful stories and the wonderful experiences and his unfathomable depth of knowledge. And I mean, he's just an amazing, amazing individual. And I was lucky enough to interview him at his home, and that's where we did this interview here. And we're just going to share part of this interview as we do have a lot, and we want to kind of break it down. And so we're going to kind of just go by Hal's pace. This will be not really cut and paste and put together. This is how it is straight from Hal, because like I said, he is a wonderful storyteller. And I think you guys are lucky, as I was lucky to go and interview him. You guys are lucky to hear some of his stories, because this is really neat history. He was part of the Manhattan Project. He was part of several different aerospace programs, and he's a huge part of the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History, I mean, since its beginning. So we're very lucky to have this interview recorded, and we want to share it with you guys today. So this takes place again at Hal's residence, and here's Hal. Hi, this is David Gibson with Radioactive Waves Podcast. I am here today with Hal Bell, and he is one of my heroes, one of the neatest guys, and he's given us a wonderful opportunity to come and have a little chat with him today. So we'll just be having a talk and telling a little bit about the life of Hal Bell. If you could just say your name.
Okay, I'm Hal Bell, Harold Bell, that's B-E-H-L.
Okay, and where and when were you born?
Well, I was born a long time ago, at a very early age. And I was born in New York City in the Bronx.
Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood growing up?
I was born in the Bronx, which is also a borough of New York. Brooklyn, the Bronx, Queens, boroughs of New York. And at the age of three, my parents moved out to Long Island, which was about 30 miles out of New York City on the South Shore on a sandbar. This is a little barrier island, maybe 10 miles long and about half a mile wide on the end of a railroad spur, so that most of the men in town could go to New York City and work and come back about 45 minutes. And I grew up there from the age of three on through high school and college. In fact, I was the first one in the Long Beach, that's the name of the town, in the Long Beach High School, the Long Beach school system, to go from kindergarten through high school.
That's awesome.
And my kids, my oldest son was born there, and he had the same kindergarten teacher that I did.
Really? That's cool. That's cool. So she could say, I remember Hal. You know, I remember your dad.
Yeah. My brother had that problem. He was 6 years behind me. And when he got into high school, the math teacher was now a principal. And the met him, and he looked at him, and he said, "Are you Harold Bell's brother?" "Yes." He said, "If you think you can get away with the things he did, you're sadly mistaken. I'm going to be watching you like a hawk." Bell came home in tears.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome. So you had you started with a legacy early on.
Yeah. And but anyways, from Long Beach High School, which was a very small high school, our graduating class was 50, and I had met my wife in the art department there, and the high school was really a good school for people who were going to go on to arts and history type things, but not for engineers.
Okay.
So I went on to engineering school, and I ended up with an aeronautical engineering degree, and I was a rotten student in high school because I couldn't catch up to the kids from New York City, for instance, who went to very fine New York School of Science and things like that. And they were so far ahead of me, it was pathetic. So my college degree was Bachelor of Aeronautical Engineering, and it was from New York University. It was one of only four universities at the time though giving aeronautical engineering degrees. And I went during World War II. World War II started in Europe in 1939, and that's when I started in college.
Okay.
The United States got into it in 1941, and that was halfway through college. And we were allowed to finish school because engineering was needed.
Important.
Important. And when I got out of school, the last summer that I was in college, the U.S. Naval Aircraft Factory in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Navy Yard actually, where they actually built airplanes, asked the university if they would lend them five students who were about to be seniors, and at least students leave a month early for summer vacation and come back a month later. Well, they did five students, four extremely brilliant people. They ended up really great. And me, I have no idea how I got into that, but it was fabulous because obviously it meant when I was looking for a job out of college, I had a lot of good experience.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I thought I wanted to be an architect, but then I learned about airplanes, and so I became an airplane nut.
Yeah, wanted to be part of that.
And I went to work for a company in San Diego. Remember, I was in Long Island, and this was San Diego, about as far as you can go. A Consolidated Vulti Aircraft, which I think became Lockheed and became Northrop Grumman. And they were building B-24 four-engine bombers.
Okay.
1 hour, right out of the rolling out machine guns, bomb sites, everything.
Man.
They were doing a lot of advanced stuff. Unfortunately, I got into the advanced things. And I was there for less than a year when they discovered that I was not over 21 and therefore could not by definition be essential to the war effort if I wasn't in a uniform. So,
if you didn't have a gun.
So I ended up coming back from San Diego to Long Beach, getting married, and then about a month later going into the Army. And of course the Army is, those days, needed people, different skills at different times, mostly riflemen in the infantry. And in the university, we had a Reserve Officer Training Corps, the ROTC.
Okay.
And we had the RTC bridge that I was in was the Army Corps of Engineers. That's the people build the bridges and the roads and blow up bridges and roads and things like that. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get a commission because I was slightly colorblind. And the Army had decided that, therefore, I was not eligible for what they called a combat arm. But when I went in the Army, the first thing that they asked us was, hey, do you have any military experience? Well, first thing they asked is, what do you think you can do? And I said, well, I want to go in the Air Corps because I got an aeronautical engineering degree. You know, here's my copy of my diploma. Here's a copy of a letter from the chief engineer, who was a friend of mine. It said I knew everything there was to know about it. Everything they were making, which was an out-and-out lie. But anyways, no sweat, you're in.
Yeah.
We got it. But by the way, do you have any military experience? So I said, yeah, you know, ROTC. Yeah, well, what'd you do? Well, what did I do in ROTC? And half the time you sat around in class, and half the time you marched around. Oh, you marched around. Tell me about it. Well, you know, we had rifles. And I wrote it down. You know, okay. And you got any other military experience? And I said, well, in California, I helped out a little bit with the State Guard. And what kind of an outfit was that? I was an infantry outfit. Infantry. And I wrote that down. And 2 days later, I was on my way to South Carolina for 13 weeks of infantry replacement training.
Ooh.
And that was the last thing that I absolutely wanted, was to be a replacement infantryman in a ground war.
Wow.
In Europe.
Yeah.
And in the winter. And just, I volunteered.
It wasn't high on your list.
I volunteered for everything I could possibly think of that might have higher priorities. Paratroops, mountain troops, commandos. Nope.
Yeah. Anything.
And then... during that time, my ROTC came in handy. I ended up instructing machine guns, which is the reason I wear hearing aids now.
Mm.
And I ended up teaching hand-to-hand combat because I was taking judo lessons in California. I had nothing to do in the evenings. And so just about a week before we were supposed to graduate, I got called in for an interview, and some officer was sitting there, and he says, about your application to go to college. And I said, I didn't apply to go to college. I got a degree. Oh, yeah? Would you like a master's degree? I said, yeah. And I said, what in? He said, what would you like? Okay, mechanical engineering. He said, all right. And by that time, I was really suspicious. I figured this wasn't going to go anywhere.
Right.
And 2 days later, I was on my way to Ohio State University in the winter. And I thought I knew what cold was. And this was cold.
Yeah.
So Ohio State University turned out to be a holding area for people with degrees in science and engineering, and that various organizations could come in and talk to them and pick them up and use them.
Okay.
So, the Air Force Research Center was right field at Dayton, Ohio, right nearby. I want to go there.
Yeah.
They were in them twice a week. They wouldn't talk to me. And finally, the same guy, I talked to before, showed up, and he said, I got this great job for you, but we only take volunteers. I said, oh, that's interesting. What would I be doing? And he said, I can't tell you. So I said, well, where would I be? He said, can't tell you. And he says, can't tell me where I'd be, and you can't tell me what I'd be doing, and you want me to volunteer? You're out of your cotton picking line. And I walked out. So, next few days, I was in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, working on the Manhattan Project.
Oh, that's awesome. That's crazy.
And the reason I was is that the Army was quite clever, and Oak Ridge especially was doing chemical processing to separate the fissionable isotope of uranium from the basic uranium you dug out of the ground.
Okay.
Like, but it's only 0.7%. And you could separate it chemically. You had to separate it by weight. Okay. So it was a very complex thing. And they ended up, because they were afraid of the Germans getting ahead of us, which was kind of scary, they decided that they would build three complete plants with three different methods. Because they couldn't afford to do one or find that it couldn't work and then spend another year building another one.
Yeah.
And they called in major chemical companies to run them, which was quite clever, rather than the Army trying to run them.
Right.
And the chemical companies immediately turned to the Army and said, hey, we can get all the hillbillies here down in Tennessee to sweep the floors. We can get any of the old PhDs in physics, you know, real old guys, 60 years old, you know, maybe. But we can't get any middle management and lower level engineers.
Okay.
You got them all in the Army or the Navy, whatever. Mm. And so they set up this special engineer detachment, which was just made up of so-called enlisted men, no officers.
Right.
Except for administrative purposes. We had a couple of offices. But basically, everyone had at least one degree in engineering or science, except for some highly specialized guys like precision machinists or scientific glass blowers. We had some really great ones.
Yeah, I would imagine the best of the best.
Yeah, really good. You know, I used to play around with glass lab all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
And burned the palm of my hand off. anyways, that's another story. So anyways, they set up this thing and they brought these guys in. And the time that I was spending at Ohio State, they were doing clearances on it and talking to everybody in the little town that I lived in. The police chief, the fire chief, the mayor, the principals of the schools, the teachers, the neighbors.
Making sure, just kind of vetting you, making sure.
And I didn't know about it. My parents, they kept coming to my parents. What happened to him? What's he done?
Yeah. You
know, they didn't know, and I didn't know. And anyways. So
yeah. What kind of trouble are you in now? Yeah.
So anyways, I spent a couple of years in Oak Ridge, and it was just great, wonderful experience, great people, learned a lot. And from there, when I got out of the Army, they gave me a choice of going out to Bikini for the tests or getting out of the Army. Mm-hmm. And as far as I was concerned, that wasn't a choice at all.
Right.
They're getting out of the Army. I went to work for Boeing. Boeing hired me for a small group of people, engineers, who were studying jet propulsion, which was brand new in those days. Rockets, ramjets, turbines, that type of thing. We had this 15 or so guys in a little storage warehouse in the corner of the plant and said, learn all about jet propulsion and tell us what we ought to be doing.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous. While we were at Ohio State, they had given us a course, a first graduate level course given in jet propulsion in the United States, and I kind of just moved out and it fed me ever since.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's pretty much that.
Thank you, Mr. Hal Bell. That was, as you can tell, something that I was really enjoying doing, was that interview with Hal. And we are going to cut it there. We do have a lot more of this interview that we will be posting in future episodes. So this is just part one of our interview with Hal, just kind of hearing some of his stories. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening to Hal as much as I enjoyed just sitting in a room and having a conversation with such an extraordinary man. And again, thank you to our Atomic History patron members. This is Anna and David. And as we end every episode, don't forget to wash your hands.
Radioactive Waves has been presented by the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History. Join us next time for more interviews, histories, and insights on topics like the Manhattan Project, science and pop culture, the atomic age, and the differences between nuclear fact and fiction.